There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Yeah, good afternoon. We are live from Barasta, where the game is always on. A lot to look forward to between now and the end of play for us, that is, at 6 o'clock this afternoon. What have we got coming up for you? Fulham against Watford is your early kickoff in the Premier League. We'll have team news and, of course, any goals as they happen, but from 12.30 this afternoon. 12.30 UK time, that is, 3.30 here in the UAE. Man United against Wolves is our featured game at 6. That's the one of six games kicking off at 6 o'clock. Local time here in the UAE. You can hear Man U against Wolves live here on Dubai 103.8, and straight after that it is Brighton against Spurs, live uninterrupted commentary and coverage courtesy of our friends and colleagues at Talk Sport. There's also an early kickoff over in Spain, so we'll keep an eye on that one for you. And it's not all about the football. Gallagher Premier League, the Guinness Pro 14, the Top 14 over in France, all in action this afternoon. There's a semi-final in the world of NRL. We'll have all the latest from the Laver Cup, the Tour Championship and the Portugal Masters, acting as two great little warm-up events ahead of the Ryder Cup. And lest we forget, the biggie a little later on, AJ against Povetkin. A lot to look forward to there. Therefore, if you are in the area, if in the vicinity, then come on down here to Barasti, where the game is always on. If you can't make it down, keep it locked on Dubai 103.8 and do send us your thoughts and comments throughout the afternoon. You can text us now on 4001, or of course you can tweet at Dubai iSport.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Top debate indeed, brought to you this afternoon by myself and, of course, The Grill panel. It is wonderful to have Robbie Greenford alongside us. Good to see you, RG. All well?
Very good, thank you, Tom. How are you?
Not too bad. Looking forward to 3 hours of sporting chat, and we've drafted in the services of a know-it-all when it comes to sport. It is Mr. Mark Archer. Good to have you back on board, Archie Arch.
Afternoon, Tom. Good to see you, Robbie. And yeah, good afternoon to all the listeners.
So you've got a bit of live sport for us straight from the off. Tell us more.
Yeah, we're into the grand final or semi-final weekend down under. All the action from the AFL and the NRL. It's the second NRL semi-final of the weekend. It's the Roosters. It's the Sydney Derby. It's the Roosters taking on the South Sydney Rabbitohs. And we're into the second half, 25 minutes to play. And it's the Roosters leading the Rabbitohs 8-4. They, of course, will play the winner from yesterday's match. It was the Melbourne Storm who were victorious, defeating the Cronulla Sharks 22-6. So 25 minutes to go, and we'll know who is the second team in the grand final, the NRL grand final next Sunday. It's the Roosters leading the Rabbitohs 8-4.
Hard at work these days, Ian, or not?
Always working, grinding away.
Okay.
What passes for work anyway?
Robbie and I are trying to work out a way how we can stay up until we reckon about 1 o'clock. Is that right, Rob?
It's in Wembley Stadium, so it's a UK fight. Main fight on the card usually starts at around 10 p.m. local time, so fast forward 3 hours, you're looking at about 1 a.m. UAE time before the two fighters, Anthony Joshua and Alexander Povetkin, are squaring off to get against one another in the ring. I'm just going to have to suffer the consequences tomorrow, Tom, because that is a fight that is not to be missed. Every time that AJ puts on a pair of boxing gloves, we see fireworks, albeit okay against Joseph Parker, a little bit disappointing in his last outing, but he's got a point to prove in this one. He's trying to set up that big date with, well, probably the winner of either Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury, but Povetkin is a very, very dangerous opponent. He beat David Price on the AJ undercard the last time that they fought on the Parker fight, the last time AJ fought, and Povetkin is not to be underestimated. So whenever two big heavyweights get in the ring and a punch connects, extraordinary things can happen, and AJ will be going into this one fully aware that he needs to be very much keeping his wits about him.
So we've also got a date, haven't we, for Wilder against Fury. December the 1st, I think,
That's
is
right.
The date that they have set for that one. It's interesting, isn't it, listening to AJ talking about this fight. And it's interesting that there's been a lot of focus, there's been a lot of chat from AJ about that other fight as well. You know, he's hoping that they get that one sorted. I wonder if he's sort of taking his eye off the ball a little bit for this one, trying to get fights down in the future sorted.
Well, I think the comment that he made, and I think the sentiment coming from AJ, was that he likes the fact that Deontay Wilder is fighting Tyson Fury, because it spreads the the interest and the wealth across the division. He felt, or he's gone on record to say, that he was very much carrying the hopes and the dreams of the division, and that all the scrutiny and the emphasis was on who he would be fighting. And now you've got another mega fight. Okay, there's caveats to be mentioned here, because Tyson Fury has had a somewhat inauspicious return to the ring following a very lengthy absence. The last time he was, you know, a true blue ribbon fight was that fight against Vladimir Klitschko, and that was what, over a couple of years ago now. So Deontay Wilder will be the man to beat in that one. He's coming off the back of a very impressive victory over Luis Ortiz, but I think that will take a little bit of attention off AJ. And AJ's been very positive about it. Of course, they had the fight that fell through. They were trying to make the AJ Wilder fight. They couldn't come to an agreement over the financial terms of the fight. And it will happen, I'm sure, eventually. Deontay Wilder has to beat Tyson Fury. AJ has to beat Povetkin, and that looks like the likely fight. But the crazy thing about heavyweight boxing is that Povetkin could beat AJ, and Fury could feasibly beat Deontay Wilder. And then where would we be in terms of making the AJ Wilder fight? So it's going to be an interesting couple of months in heavyweight boxing.
In some ways, Robbie, it's a little bit of a golden era in the heavyweight division. We've talked about it, you know, for a number of years now. It hasn't really been the prime focus for a lot of people who are in the boxing game. We've always talked about, you know, Mayfield and the middleweight and that type of division, and Pacquiao and these types of fighters. But in the last 2 years now, we've seen emergence of some genuine contenders. AJ trying to unite all the belts, that's interesting. And whatever happens in that fight between Wilder, the Wilder fight, I think AJ's got to fight, you know, almost two more fights there as well. It doesn't really matter who wins or loses that, because a lot of the British public are wanting a Fury fight just for public interest's sake, whether he wins or defeats Wilder. And Wilder becomes that big transatlantic battle at some stage. That might happen maybe in Vegas, let's wait and see. But there's some massive bouts on the horizon, not deals that are done yet, but you can see in the next 2 years there's some really, really peak fights. And I guess someone like AJ, who's young and marketable and doing well and undefeated, has really got to look a lot forward to.
I don't think anyone would claim that there is an all-time great in the division right now. I think that there's no Holyfield, there's no Mike Tyson in terms of someone with that level of ability. What we've seen, though, is the emergence of the super heavyweight. These guys are absolutely massive. The fact that AJ, at 6'6" and, what, 240 pounds, is the smallest of those three guys. Deontay Wilder, 6'7". Tyson Fury, 6'9". Vladimir Klitschko, 6'6" as well. So we've seen the fighters in the heavyweight division just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And when these guys land a big punch, then it's lights out. And that's what we've seen. It's got an element of drama that the lesser divisions, the lighter divisions in boxing, just simply don't have, because as we saw with Triple G and Canelo, that fight, two knockout artists, but it went the distance. They couldn't hurt each other fundamentally, despite landing with some big shots. That won't happen in the heavyweight division. When AJ connects, someone goes down, and it's the same with these other guys, and there'll be an element of caution about that. I thought that was a very cautious fight with the Parker fight, and I think it's got to the, I think Anthony Joshua now feels a little bit of pressure on his shoulders. He's undefeated. He's turned into a big, big star. And there's a lot of scrutiny on him. There's a lot of people comparing him to fighters from yesteryear. And you just got the impression in that last fight that he was boxing a little bit more cautiously than he has in the past. Maybe that's because the caliber of the opponent has gone up. But it'll be very interesting to see how things pan out tonight at Wembley Stadium. There'll be a sellout crowd of 90,000 people watching that fight. And yeah, I can't wait for... It's a more curious fight, Deontay Wilder against Tyson Fury. But I'm looking forward to that, because those are two wordsmiths as well, those two. Very amusing to follow both of them on their social media feeds. They are regularly firing little pop shots at one another on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, that one will be dramatic as well. But looking forward to tonight, Wembley Stadium, 1 a.m, Tom. It is Alexander Povetkin, the Russian challenger, who Anthony Joshua says will have the weight of a government behind him. Let's just hope that's all he has behind him in terms of government support from the Russians. We know they've been in the news for certain other reasons in athletics this week, but Anthony Joshua, the man to beat, the favourite going into that fight, and I'm looking forward to it. Wembley Stadium, 1 a.m.
Yeah, they will be walking into the ring at 10 to 10 local time back in the UK. So, yeah, as you say, just before 1 o'clock local time here in the UAE, it's going to be a cracker. I mean, I think we just need to mention, we're talking there a lot about the heavyweight division. This time last week, you, me, and Chris McCarty were sat around this very desk, looking ahead to a great fight in the wee small hours of last week's Sunday morning. it was a great fight, but again, this question mark hangs over the way that some of these fights are being judged and adjudicated. And we talk about the health in which the heavyweight division is at the moment. Something, however, needs to be done in order to maintain credibility, especially in that division. I mean, how the fight was judged as it was, how it wasn't closer on the cards, is not just beyond my reading of the fight, because I can't call it like a Chris McCarty can or anything like that. I can't count them. But just reading the reports that we read straight after that fight, it's not great for the game when so many people have a question mark about the result.
Yeah, and so many former boxers and former stars were disagreeing with the scorecards and the way that came down. I mean, you know, when the fight's that close, you're going to get anomalies. Yeah. And unfortunately, what happened in the first fight between these two, Golovkin and Alvarez, was there was an outlier in one of the judges' scorecards. They scored it 118 to 110 in favour of Canelo when most people had thought that Triple G had won the fight. And second time round, I think stepping back from all the whys and the wherefores of the whole thing, because you know people are saying, well, Triple G said he was going to fight Mexican style, stand in the middle of the ring and dictate the fight, and it was Canelo standing in the middle of the ring dictating the fight, and therefore Triple G was penalised for what exactly? It's a tactic. He was using his jab. Canelo landed with the bigger punches in the first half of the fight. Triple G landed with the bigger punches in the second half of the fight. At the end of the day, I look at that over the piece, and I don't think either of those guys won that fight. Yeah. I mean, it was just, you could not pick a winner. And when it's that close, I think there needs to be almost a consensus. Instead of relying on the opinion of three people, there just needs to be an overall consensus that, hang on a minute, Canelo's the challenger here. There's no way he did enough in that fight to wrest the belt from Gennady Golovkin. You could argue that Golovkin did enough to keep it, but it was a draw. I think the fight was a draw, and I certainly don't think Canelo was the victor. But
you can't help but be a conspiracy theorist with things like this, especially when you look at where they were fighting in Nevada in front of a very passionate, mainly Mexican crowd there. Obviously, that was their home bout as well. It was Mexican Independence Day. We had all the pomp and the circumstance before.
And actually, something curious about Canelo as well, in his Mayweather fight, which everyone agrees was a shutout, Mayweather won, I think, 10 of the 12 rounds in that fight. One of the judges scored it a victory for Canelo, right, and it was a split decision, which Mayweather was obviously furious about. And you look at the replays of that fight, and Mayweather absolutely schooled him. There's no doubt about that. He was much younger back then. He didn't land a glove. And clearly, he's the cash cow, as you just mentioned. Yeah. It's Mexican Independence Day. He's got a massive following in the US as well as in Mexico. Yeah. He's 30, 29, 30. Golovkin's 36. So Golovkin's towards the end of his career. The money men know where the money's to be made. Yeah. And it's in Canelo Alvarez, not Gennady Golovkin. And Golovkin, knowing that, must have gone into that fight thinking, I need to actually finish this guy because I'll never get a decision. And you almost saw that look of resignation on his face at the end of the fight, because I think he could just see history repeating itself. And for him to have been scored a draw and a loss over the piece when quite conceivably Golovkin could have won both of those fights must be a bitter pill. He's a classy guy. He stormed out of the ring at the time, but later made a statement to congratulate his opponent. But it's such a shame. And boxing needs to... I mean, boxing won't. Boxing's the sport that will never change. Sports modernise and bring in technology, and boxing is still everything. All the rules it had 100 years ago, it still has now. Why they haven't added to the judging panel, why they haven't used CompuBox stats to get a better understanding of who's won each round, why they haven't done away with all the different federations and the different councils, to me, there's so much wrong with it, and yet a good fight is as good a sport as you're ever going to see. So it was a fantastic spectacle last week, but it's a shame that
we can pretty much guarantee we can look forward to the third one as well, can't we?
I was just about to ask Robbie, do we see a third edition of this episode? Well, do we see the trifecta?
I think it has to. We have to, because I think the narrative hasn't reached a satisfactory conclusion yet. Golovkin will definitely want a rematch, but then again, by the time they meet again, it's probably going to be this time next year. Golovkin will be 37, Alvarez still in his pomp. you can only really see the story going one way, and that's towards Canelo Alvarez. In 24 rounds, Golovkin hasn't been able to knock out Alvarez, and that's not something he's ever had a problem doing in the past. So I think there will be. There's so much money. There'll be so much demand for a third fight. And, everything points to there being a third fight. Canelo Alvarez, of course, knows that provided he doesn't get knocked out, he'll probably be scored the winner again in a third fight. So I can see him taking it as well.
Speaking about boxing, speaking about money, speaking about elder statesmen in the fighting game, did I not read or hear media reports or speculation that Manny Pacquiao is going to fight Manny Mayweather again?
Yeah.
Three years after they were both too old to have the fight 3 years ago.
You didn't read reports, Arch. You saw a post on Floyd Mayweather's Instagram and Twitter page effectively saying just that. He says, I'm coming out of retirement. I am fighting Manny Pacquiao. From what we're reading, that negotiation is a long way down the line. And it's ridiculous. It really is ridiculous. We've seen it once. I didn't enjoy it at the time. It was grossly overhyped. It was a disappointing spectacle the first time around. Manny Pacquiao has subsequently deteriorated further. Floyd Mayweather has not fought since a farcical bout against Conor McGregor. And both of them are now combined age of, I think, 81. So do we need to see that? Is that really going to be the fight that breaks box office records and makes Floyd Mayweather another nine-figure sum? Possibly.
You're listening to Dubai Live 103.8, your home of the Premier League here in the UAE. And we've got two games to look forward to for you live here on Dubai a little later on this afternoon. Manchester United against Wolves is our feature game at 6 o'clock, and then at 8.30, Brighton against Spurs. Before that, though, we've got Fulham against Watford. That's the early kickoff. And as the wickets fall, we will be reporting them for you as we watch it here on the big screen at Barasti. This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Yeah, we're live from Barasti, where the game is always on at the moment. Talking of that game, we have got a Premier League game coming your way in just a few moments' time. Early kickoff is Fulham against Watford. Let's hear from the respective managers now. We'll hear from Garcia in just a few moments' time, but let's hear from Jukanovic first, the Fulham boss who entertained Watford this afternoon.
We are still not enough brave. No, I don't believe it's our solution. It's be scared. Try waiting only for one chance and score one goal and try finish the game 1-0 is completely legal. But I am working with my team. I try understand characteristic of my players, characteristic of my squad, and we're gonna try choice best way for my team.
All the players we have in this moment, for me, they have high value, and you never know what happened in the future, because many times it depends on many circumstances. But for me, all the players are good, very good players, and I'm sure all of them have a high value.
It is Fulham against Watford. It's kicking off in a few moments' time. Robbie Greenfield's got a bit of team news for us ahead of this one.
I certainly do, Tom, yeah. Early kickoff. Watford fourth in the table, flying high at the moment, and they'll start with Ben Foster in goal. Holebas, Cabaselli, Cathcart and Janmaat across the back four. Then a midfield of Kapuwe, Ducore, Hughes and Pereira. Andre Gray and Troy Deeney will start up front for Watford. Fulham, let's look at them. Marcus Bettinelli in goal for Fulham. Fosu Mensah, Chambers, Mawson and Sessegnon across the back four. It's a midfield three of Seri, McDonald and Johansson, with that potent striker who's in form at the moment, Alexander Mitrovic, assisted by Andre Schürrle and Luciano Vietto up front. Fulham a little further down the table. Watford getting off, as I mentioned, to that brilliant start in the Premier League. 12 points after five games, and Fulham will be looking to mix fire with fire in this one. They're down in 15th at the moment, having just picked up 4 points from their opening five games. It's been a tough start for Fulham on their return to the Premier League, Tom.
Yeah, we're going to be getting the players out into the field very, very shortly. That one's getting underway in about 4 minutes' time, so we'll keep an eye on that for you live here on Dubai 103.8. Matt Burns, join us. He is the brains, the vision, the driving force of AFL Middle East. He's down with us here from our broadcast position. Good to have you on board, Matt. All well?
Thanks for having me, Tom. Yeah, all well.
Listen, we're going to move on to AFL Grand Final in just a few moments' time, because I know that this man alongside me, Mark Archer, is desperate to talk all things AFL Grand Final, with good reason as well. But bring us up to date with the local league. How are things going at the moment? How's 2018 to 19 looking?
Yeah, it's shaping up nicely. Obviously, we've had the summer break. Teams are now back into training. The season will kick off November, first weekend of November. And we'll have a pre-season cup this year. We're actually going to Bahrain on October the 12th. So we're trying to get a team up and running in Bahrain. There's a bit of interest there at the moment, not enough to go into this season, but we're going to head there October 12th and play a sort of pre-season knockout tournament at the Bahrain Rugby Club. So, but round one is November 9, and it's shaping up nicely with the four teams again.
Good stuff. And in terms of the players coming in, etc., are we seeing a sort of upscale on that in terms of numbers getting involved year on year?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it tends to be some people go, some people come in, like most things that happen in the UAE over summer. So, but the club numbers at the moment are training for, you know, it's still very warm out there, as we all know. But the numbers for like Dingoes and the Falcons, Dragons and Bulls, what I've been seeing on their Facebook pages is good training numbers, which is a good sign.
And in terms of, I mean, if there are those listening in at the moment, maybe played a bit in the past, maybe haven't played it, but would like to find out more, like to get involved, do they have like open days with the teams, the respective teams, if people want to give it a go?
Yeah, of course. I mean, all the clubs are open. So you can go onto our Facebook page at AFLME or go to www.aflmiddleeast.com and you'll find all the information there. The contact email is direct to me and I'll pass that on to all the clubs. But all clubs are welcoming of all abilities. You don't have to be an Aussie expat. You can be, we've got a few Irish lads, obviously, coming from the Gaelic side of things, rugby players, because they love the tackle. So, all clubs are open to everyone.
Do you have to have a background in it, Matt? Do you have to be familiar with the rules of the game and have played a bit in the past? You know, you mentioned the Irish lads, but just to have a know-how a little bit, or could someone who is complete beginner, could they rock up and have a go?
A background certainly helps, but... all the clubs welcome everyone and they'll teach you.
I'm tentatively asking whether I should come down. It's basically, I mean, what I'm saying.
As you guys probably know, it is a very complicated game. A lot of people say there's no rules, but there definitely is rules. But again, all the clubs would teach players how to play. Well, I've definitely had guys that have never touched the ball in their life. They've only played football, soccer, as we call it. But some of them turn into really good players. If they've just got a bit of courage, which you do need, you can do anything.
It's amazing that, sorry Arch, just to jump in, but the export of AFL as well. I mean, just an example I saw over the summer when I was back in London, and over the weekends, just walking across Clapham Common, just the crowd turning up to watch AFL, you know, just local teams going at it against each other. They had the TV cameras there. It was a televised event. You know, this was more than a sort of average knock around in the park of a weekend or something like that. Massive crowds down there as well. Great support. A lot of sort of food concessions and bits and pieces like that as well. And I suppose it has become a good sporting export for Australia.
Yeah, definitely. And especially over in the UK, there's AFL Europe who do get a lot of support from the AFL back in Australia. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't get that direct support. It's just not a market they're targeting at the moment. They are helping us out with minor things, but with those bigger leagues over in Europe, which and AFL Asia as well, they get some direct support, which does help them, and it's definitely huge over there.
And Matt, we've seen the AFL has a great junior program. I think it's called Auskick. And we have seen different sort of... That come up here in the UAE before. I know there are different programs in place. If you're a parent, if you've got a youngster and you want to get them into the sport, is all Auskick programs available here in the UAE for kids to take part of and really learn the basics of the game?
Yeah, there is. Auskick's very popular. There's one in Dubai, which they run on Saturday mornings. That will start the first weekend of October. And again, all that information can get through our website and Facebook page. But that's from ages from 5 to 15. Even if you're a bit younger than 5, they can come along and kick the ball. Because the great thing about Aussie rules is that there's so many aspects to it. You can kick, you can mark, you can run, you can tackle. So it's never boring for the kids as well. So Dubai is the biggest with the Auskick, but we're also starting in Abu Dhabi. There's a gentleman down there who's introducing it to his school, and they're doing after-school programs down there. So we're hoping to grow it around each of the Emirates.
I know the big thing Robbie was really looking forward to coming down was trying to fit into a tight pair of shorts and a really tight sort of top. Is that if he comes there down, will you make one of them available for him?
If I can fit into them, anyone can. So, but yeah, no, we do. Everyone laughs at our short shorts we wear and our singlet tops that I still don't know why we do it, even though I've played it my whole life, because we play in winter back in Australia, so it's freezing in the middle of June, July, but we're running around in a singlet and tight shorts, so it's interesting.
Yeah, when you've got an athlete's body, I think you can get away with it, but I think I'd struggle, and I don't think you would be cutting such a fine dash either yourself, Mark Archer, so thank you for that. But listen, let's fast forward and look ahead if we can, Matt, to I know you're very excited about the impending crescendo of the Australian Football League Championship, because your team is found its way all the way to the final. Collingwood has beaten Richmond, and the West Coast Eagles were successful over Melbourne in the semi-finals today. Talk us through those games, what you made of them, and look ahead to the final.
Yeah, it's obviously a big week for back home with the AFL Grand Final next Saturday. So we call them the preliminary finals, which were yesterday afternoon, and this morning. Collingwood were huge, and again, in my team, but huge upset against Richmond. Richmond being the best team for the last 18 months. They won last year's premiership. Mm. This year, being completely dominant, finished on top, won their first final quite easily, had the week off, come back. No one expected Collingwood to do what they did, and they were 50 points up at halftime, and then ended up winning by 39 points in that.
What was the key to that?
The pressure. The pressure from Collingwood was just unbelievable. And again, I'm not being biased or anything, but that first half of football.
You can be. You're a fan. You can be biased.
I've had many text messages of people saying they've never seen a team play like that half of football for a long time. They just made Richmond look, they were playing a Richmond style of football, which is very sort of manic and just keep the ball moving and lots of pressure and numbers at the ball, and it just turned it around and won the game quite easily.
And there was two, I mean, only it takes the Aussies to call what I would have thought were two semi-finals, two preliminary finals, keep it simple, but both games were quite big blowouts. The match early today in Perth, where the West Coast Eagles really thrashed Melbourne by 66 points, Melbourne didn't score a goal in the first half. I think that's correct. That's almost unheard of, isn't it, in the sport?
Yeah, well, the stat, I think, was last time that was done in a final was 1927, so that's how rare it was. But yeah, that game this morning, a lot of people thought Melbourne, they beat West Coast 2 weeks earlier in a home and away season over in West Coast, and Melbourne just did not turn up today. It was not great for them.
You were just talking about the local league and players of all shapes and sizes can play. I was just doing my research before the show, and I came across this player here who had a star day. I don't know much about him, and you're going to put me in the picture, and the listeners in the pictures here. Guy by the name of Mason Cox. He had 3 goals and 11 marks. And he's an American. I just want to listen to the highlights of some of the big plays that he made today.
Marchick made the contest with Asprey, with Blossom, I should say, back to Blossom. Great tackle by you know who, the big guy from Texas through Oklahoma with a bit of USA bravado there.
I don't think they're looking to run time off the clock. I think they're just looking to get back in rhythm and in control.
Cox on in, I mean. It has been a colossus tonight, the absolute elite. Oh, we probably weren't used to it. We are now, aren't we? We know that he is. Oh, I cannot believe it. And Collingwood will go in to the 2018 Grand Final, a famous victory on the back of this man here.
That was the man named Mason Cox, an American. How do you get an American basketball player, a guy that didn't really make it at college basketball, starring for the Collingwood Magpies? Where did he come from?
It's an unbelievable story. I think it was probably 4 years ago, 4 to 5, he hadn't even kicked, didn't even know about the sport and hadn't even kicked the ball. He was recruited, I don't know the full back story, but there's a lot of recruiting done from Ireland, from the Gaelic teams, and now they're actually going to the States because these athletes that and not making it pro in basketball or football, they're obviously got this amazing ability, and he's 200 plus centimeters.
He's 7 feet.
Yeah,
he's incredible.
Huge. And so they see the athlete, and they think, well, we can teach them the skills. They've already got skills in that other sport. And yeah, his game yesterday, he's been much maligned. He's had a few you know, a slow start to his career in the first couple of years, which was to be expected. He had a bad first final this year. And then, yeah, yesterday he was pretty much almost best on ground.
I mean, amazing. 3 goals, 11 marks. I think it was 15 disposals. I've got no idea what a disposal was, but it sounds though he was doing his job. But so you think in the future we might see more Americans come over. The big guys, the athletic, they can obviously, if they're basketball, even American football background, they can catch the ball. It's just really kicking them how to punt it, and really the basic, I guess all the Aussies grow up with it, but all the basics about how to move, where to be, positional play, strategy, etc.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be growing. And there is a couple of others that were in a few of the other teams from the USA. They didn't quite make it, but I can definitely see it growing.
Just going to jump in, fellas, because there has been an early goal in the early kickoff. Let's get the latest from Robbie Greenfield.
Yeah, certainly has. And it's gone to the visitors, Tom. It is Watford who have taken the lead against Fulham 1-0. And it is the boot of Andre Gray that has given them that lead. Dreadful defending was the crux of it. Fulham failed to clear the ball. It fell to Will Hughes. He had a simple pass, slide rule pass, to Andre Gray, who was in acres of space and had a simple task of slotting it into the bottom corner of the net. It is Fulham 0, Watford 1 in the early kickoff. And Watford's fine start to this Premier League season is continuing.
Back to you, Mark Archer.
Yeah, so Matt, so put us in the picture. It's the grand final next weekend. Collingwood Magpies, I think they came from being the fifth seed back, or the fifth team at the end of the sort of the Premiership season. They're taking on the West Coast Eagles. There'll be best part of 100,000 raving lunatics at the MCG, of course. Where you're going to go to the match, but if you're in the UAE or in Dubai, where can you go to watch the match? Where would you recommend?
Yeah, I am going. I'm just trying to sort my flights at the moment. But yeah, the best place, Barasti here itself, is hosting a breakfast, which is through the Australian Business Council of Dubai. 8:30 a.m. is the kickoff of the grand final, but I think the doors are opening from 8 a.m. So you can pre-buy tickets because there's a catered breakfast for everyone. You can go to abcduae.com or check our Facebook page, but that's where all the action will be next Saturday.
So by the time the boys get down in next weekend for the grill, it could be a little bit rowdy. It could be a few Aussies around pretty happy.
There could be. Hopefully they all have a day off on Sunday.
The question I've got for you, though, is how on earth are you going to cope with missing the Ryder Cup?
I'm sure I won't lose too much sleep.
Oh, cheers. Fair point. Fair point. It is. I tell you what, it's going to be a massive... These games get over 100,000 people in attendance, don't they?
Yeah, it's at the MCG, which I think capacity is about 102,000.
Yeah.
So the final yesterday was 95,000, which is a little bit disappointing, to be honest, with two Melbourne teams. But it's going to be 95 to 100 easily.
It's a big sporting weekend next weekend because you've got the AFL final on the Saturday, you've got the NRL final on the Sunday. It really is the climax of those two major winter codes coming together on one big weekend.
Rugby and championship back as well, isn't
rugby
it?
Rugby championship's back. Yeah, I think the Wallabies are over in South Africa, New Zealand and Argentina. But massive sporting weekend down under in Australia. It's a good place to be a sports fan, I guess, next weekend.
It certainly is, and this is probably the main time of the year where I miss home the most with the football, then heading into the spring carnival with the racing. So it's a huge time, and Melbourne, they say, is sporting capital of the world. We like to claim that. So, yeah, definitely with the AFL and NRL, it's massive.
And in terms of the sort of traditions, you know, we've all got our sort of traditions, FA Cup, you go and do your bits and pieces, you watch it there. What's the grand final traditions back home? Is it barbecues with mates, or what are the things that one should do with an AFL final?
On the game day, if you're not at the game, you're definitely having a barbecue. There's always the weather. Again, it's spring, but because it's Melbourne, the weather could be 25 and sunny, or it could be 15 and rain. So that depends on all your plans. But there's a huge build-up during the week. There's a grand final parade on Friday, which goes through Melbourne, and all the players on the back of cars. So it's a massive week around Melbourne itself. But, yeah, most people will be having a barbecue, family and friends, and watching the game.
And are these players major celebrities in Australia? Will they get mobbed if they went to a shopping mall, for example?
Yeah, they are celebs. I wouldn't say they get mobbed. I probably haven't got the status like some of these Premier League stars and La Liga, but they're definitely well-known faces. It's the biggest sport in Australia, the most watched.
Hard to miss Mason Cox, that's for sure.
Exactly. He's becoming bigger and bigger. So, yeah, they are very famous.
Yeah. Matt, you've been really kind to come on down and tell us not just about the grand final, but also about the local league. For those that are interested to find out more about AFL-ME, best thing for them to do?
AFLMiddleEast.com, or just look us up on Facebook or Twitter, AFL-ME.
Good on you, fella. Thanks so much indeed for your time this afternoon. All the best with the forthcoming season as well. And, of course, the small matter of a grand final next weekend as well.
No, thank you for having me.
Big thanks to Matt Byrne then. Find out all the details on there. Of course, the interview will be podcast straight after the show as well, so you can listen back to that if you missed out on any. What's going on in the NRL? Let's get the latest from Mark Archer.
Yeah, we're just bringing you bang up to date with the AFL final. Of course, that's going to be Collingwood taking on West Coast. And I can tell you now, Tom, it's the Sydney Roosters have just defeated the Rabbitohs 12 points to 4. 3 tries to nil, so deserving win for the Roosters. They will take on the Melbourne Storm next weekend. The grand final will be in Sydney. Big crowd also expected there for that. So it'll be the Roosters taking on the Storm in the NRL grand final next Sunday.
Looking
big sporting weekend.
We've also got action in the Premier League underway as we speak. There was an early goal. Let's just get more on that one from Robbie Greenfield.
Yeah, early goal. It went the way of Watford, Tom, and Andre Gray has been the scorer of that early goal. Watford started the better of these two teams. Fulham trying to just settle down. They've had more possession. They've had 68% possession, in fact, have Fulham, but they've lacked the penetration of Watford, at least in these early stages. So Watford 1, Fulham 0. Andre Gray in the second minute of this game. It is only 12 minutes old, so early stages still. Time for Fulham to get back into this one, but Watford leading 1-0.
We're going to keep an eye on that one for you, and in just a few minutes' time we're going to be meeting a new sporting star here in the UAE, a fixture in the top 30 in the world for women's squash. She is now resident here in the UAE. She's going to be telling us about her journey and, of course, what we can expect next. That's Kanzi Defrawi joining us live on the air in just a few moments' time, so stay tuned for that.
Fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Live sport ongoing down here at Barasti as we speak. Let's start with the Premier League. 13 minutes in, and there has been a goal. Fulham against Watford. Robbie Greenfield.
Andre Gray is the scorer. The second minute, Watford didn't have to wait long to open the deadlock here. It was a cross from Will Hughes across the box. Andre Gray in loads of space, and he fired into the bottom corner of the net, Tom. Watford 1, Fulham 0. And Fulham just trying to get back into this. They're enjoying most of the possession, but Watford have the goal that counts at the moment. 1-0 with 14 minutes on the clock.
Let's talk squash now, because we are very happy to be joined by our next guest here on The Grill this afternoon. A lady who has occupied the top 30 in the world of women's squash players for, what, the past 10 years or so, since turning pro in 2008. Currently ranked world number 29. And I'm very happy to say, calling Dubai home now as well. Kanzi Defrawi joins us live from our broadcast position. Kanzi, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here today.
No, it's really kind of you to join us. And thank you so much indeed for coming down to tell us a little bit about that journey as well. In terms of, I mean, I suppose that where better to start than Dubai? Why Dubai? I mean, you're an individual who is very well travelled. You studied over in the States. You've taken your squash and squash to different levels. What is it about the UAE? What is it about Dubai that's attractive for you for this next chapter of your life?
So basically, I came back here in June. I had a squash camp. So I recruited 13 of my players and we did the squash camp. And it was sort of a random country that I picked just to have something new, because I've explored the U.S. in the last 6 years. So I wanted to do something new with my location-wise, in terms of my camps. I recruited 13 players, and we ran a camp here in June, and then I realized how Dubai is the perfect place for squash. So first of all, you have 1,500 courts, as crazy as that sounds. You literally have 1,500 courts. Yeah. It's the perfect sport in terms of the weather. The weather is extremely hot, and you know, it's an indoor sport, it's air conditioned, and you have all the resources that you need. So for me, it was absolutely crazy to see that this is the perfect place and the perfect country for the sport, and there's no national team. Yeah. There's no federation, there's no national team, and it's an unexplored sport here. So it was, for me, I've always wanted to do something huge with squash. I've always wanted to, you know, give it more exposure, for it to get into the Olympics. I've always wanted squash to get more credit than it has right now in the world. So I just thought, okay, I'm going to move out of the US and do something big here with it.
Squash is big in the Arab world, Kanzi, particularly in Egypt. Explain to me, and I know you hail from Egypt, what is it with Egyptians and squash? Why has that country become so dominant in one sport? Because we see it on both the male and the female side of the professional game.
Right,
it's an absolute lockout. No other nation can get a look in at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's pharaonic genes. That's what it is.
Right.
No, I mean, here's the thing. I grew up, I started playing at 7. And when I grew up, I was growing up watching all the legends of the game. So Rami Ashour, for example, Karim Darwish, Raneem even, women and men. You just see them every single day. They play in front of you. You grow up with them. You watch them play. So it's kind of the generation of the really good players are just playing in front of you. So our level is always a lot better than any other country. You grow up around all these legends. So you have a whole generation of people. The other really big reason, this was a big part of my research, it's because every single time someone asked me, I didn't have a legit answer for it. And I went on doing crazy research about it because I really wanted to know what was the big reason. And it was very interesting because I came to realize that it was linked to nationalism. So think about it. Egypt is a third world country. Economically, we're not very good. Politically, it's a big disaster after the revolution. And squash is our only thing that we're really proud of. It's our faith. It's the only sport in Egypt where people can really go on internationally and be successful. You know, you go on internationally, you meet the president. You win this tournament, the government supports you. So it's kind of our pride. It's like if all the parents put their kids in squash, they know they have an international success. Especially in the last 5-6 years, I would say, USA started recruiting a lot of Egyptian squash players from Egypt. So it was a really good opportunity for a third world country to send over their kids to have a really good education in the United States.
You know, when you mentioned there about the opportunities, and you're obviously very passionate about your Egyptian heritage and continuing that, was it a tough decision for you to go over to the States to study, or was that, again, as you said, a perfect golden opportunity?
It was definitely really hard. I was actually the second Egyptian female in the whole squash community in Egypt to move to the States. Yeah. It was extremely hard for my parents to let me go, especially that I'm the oldest of 4 girls. You know, Egypt is very traditional in terms of their thinking. Girls are not going to go to the U.S. and around the different environment. It's really far from home. Yeah. My parents I got recruited, so we couldn't really say no because I was offered a really good financial aid. It was just really, it would be insane to turn down this opportunity. So I was one of the very first few people. Now it's getting a lot more common. But it was very hard for me to go, and it ended up being the best 4 years of my life. So,
Kenzie, we've seen squash as a sport go through some peaks and some troughs, and it's a wonderful participation sport. I can't think of many sports that are better for your cardiovascular, for fitness. It really gives you a super workout. 1 hour of squash is pretty much you're done and dusted for a few days.
I'm lucky to last recover 10 minutes, let alone an hour.
But it's a wonderful participatory sport, and we've seen it sort of go through some highs on the international stage in terms of having high profile and some sort of lows. Now we know. It's been trying to sort of get awareness on the Olympic and the IOC and trying to become an Olympic sport to really make it to the next level. Where do you see sport as internationally? Not just the sport we all play and love to have a game of squash and find a court in our hotel room or in the local golf club, etc., or tennis courts. Where is it internationally? Is squash in a good place?
It's getting a lot better. I would say we have a really good chance of getting into the Olympics in 6 years from now. We had a really bad, it was very hard for us to lose to wrestling. When squash lost to wrestling in the Olympics, this was very hard on us. I remember I was in college and all the wrestling guys came and rubbed it in my face. So I remember that really well. So I'm seeing it. It's getting better. I see it's getting better in the Middle East. That's one. It's definitely getting a lot better in the States, especially in the last 2 years. You have now maybe around 2,000 junior players that are actively competing. With that number three years ago, that number was around 300. So you're talking 5 times more players, especially that it gives them opportunities to get into really good academics. So I would say it's growing really fast, and I only hope for better things in the future.
And your plans here, Kansi, how do you help to grow the game in Dubai? What ideas have you got? How are you personally going to get involved in that?
So when I came here, I realized something that was really shocking to me. It's the fact that all the players here are amateurs. Yeah. So you're talking about older generations, you know, men who work, businessmen who work and who go play for fun after their job, some sort of, to sort of de-stress or, you know, like you said, get some fitness. And there are no youth. You know, the younger generation, we're talking 12 to 18 years, you don't have players. And this is the most important generation to focus on. And my main goal here, basically, the reason, the biggest reason why I came here is because my dream is to build a national team here. We have a great government. We have, all the resources are there. Money is here. So if I can really build a generation from scratch, you know, we're talking maybe 10 kids who are really focused from the ages of 12 to 18, then maybe in a couple of years we can start talking about a national team.
Wow. That's a very ambitious idea, but it's certainly something that would be needed for the region. And in terms of where that would be located, have you got an idea as to the headquarters of that?
Or? Right. So this is these are some crazy statistics I'm going to give you. But like you said, Egypt is the best country in squash, and we have a total of 282 courts. Okay, and it's the best country. In Dubai, you have 1,600 courts, and you have no players. But the biggest problem here is that you don't have any two courts near each other. Yeah. So you have the maximum is two courts next to each other. You don't have a complex. You don't have so the maximum players I can control is six people. So it's also a limited resources here. That's the biggest problem. So eventually, you know, we would want or need a complex that consists of maybe six courts minimum. So we're talking 6 to 15 courts, where we can really have a whole academy and a whole organization and a whole national team and really build a team from there.
Mm. But for you and your professional career as well, you're looking to get back into it. You're only 24 years of age, right?
Definitely, yes.
What are your aspirations for 2018?
So I'm recovering from a back injury right now. I should be good to go in the next 2 months, I would say. I definitely want to break the top 10. This is definitely my first goal into the PSA Women's. I've actually beaten a lot of players in the top 15. So it's just a matter of picking up the right tournaments, getting on that right training program, and just sticking to the process.
Wow. And you mentioned the PSA there, and obviously you've been working at the PSA over the last couple of years. We've partnered with them whilst the finals come into Dubai. Has that helped spread the word of squash here in the region as well?
Definitely. The only problem with here is that this PSA tournament is a friendly one.
Right.
So it's more of a leisure kind of thing. Even the players come here and it's a best of three and not a best of five. And they just like enjoy their times swimming with dolphins and skydiving. And
it's the end of the season. Exactly. You know,
they just take it as a complete joke kind of thing. The points don't count for the ranking, so that's also another reason. I'll never forget that day, there was a match at 2 p.m. one day in the PSA Super Series, and of course you couldn't get, it was like a midweek, it was on Wednesday or something, and you couldn't get any, dads or, you know, men to watch because everyone was working. So the PSA decided to invite the school, and it was all kids, so you have them for the ages of 10 to 18, and they couldn't believe what they were watching. It's like they were so into it. It's like they were in Disneyland. So it's not that there's no interest here. It's that there is no awareness.
I watched quite a few of the matches at the Dubai Opera, not the year just gone, the year before that. And one thing that struck me was the amount of conversation that takes place between the players and the umpire. He was sat up the top, above the spectators. And there was quite a lot of aggressive conversation that was taking place, and that's something that I had no idea. But squash is such a fast game that decisions that need to be made in the spur of the moment, that you're not relying on, you know, slow motion replays and that kind of thing, there's a lot of disagreements on the
definitely,
squash court.
Definitely.
Are you quite fiery when you're playing?
Yeah, I break a lot of brackets. No, I actually used to be really bad, but they very recently they made really strict rules.
Right.
It's if you even talk to the referee in a bad way, you're going to get a warning.
It's lucky Serena Williams isn't a squash player, isn't it, really?
I was going to say, Kenzie, if you're here looking for a hitting partner, I can recommend our good host, Tom Urquhart.
Oh, he's very a squash guru, this guy.
He's very nimble, very athletic, and, you know, he plays once or twice a week.
I bet he won't be able to get a point.
I can guarantee I won't be able to get a point.
I'll take that bet.
I'm more than happy to take that bet. I think my squash days are beyond me now, my dodgy knees. But there are those listening in at the moment going, okay, I want to find out more. I want to take this further. I want to be part of this journey that Kenzie's going on here as well. I mean, is there a system in place at the moment people can get in touch with you in terms of coaching, in terms of trying to get to push this thing forward at the moment?
Definitely. So, as I said, I only moved here a month ago.
Yeah.
And right now I'm trying to build a big network of clients. So anyone can, if you can go on my website, it's www.theflyingdaff.com.
Brilliant name. Good on you.
It's my name. Reach me out on Instagram anytime. It's also The Flying Daff. So if anyone wants to join, right now we don't have an academy set in place, but it's starting to grow. So the first day I came here, I only had one client. Right now I have over 20. Wow. And we're kind of, they're all playing together because for me, I'm doing it in a more fun environment. It's not just to get better as a squash player. As I said, most of my clients are amateurs, so we're trying to get them to have fun more than to get in this as a serious game of, you know, you don't want people to stress out while they're playing.
And that's the ambition, that's what you're trying to do from a development point of view. I mean, in terms of you and your goals to break top 10 and things like that after the back injury, is Dubai a good place for that? Will this be a good base for you to have your training program?
It's not the best, of course, because we, as I said, there aren't that many players. Yep. There's maybe two players who I can competitively play with on a weekly basis. The other thing my plan is, okay, I will be based here, but I will take maybe a month in the U.S. before a tournament, a month in Egypt. So I'll be based here in terms of business-wise, in terms of building a whole squash academy, in terms of my clients. But in terms of my training, I won't be just based here.
Sure. It is a fascinating journey, and I think it's long overdue. We've spoken. How often we've spoken on this show
about it? It's one of the great crimes in sport that squash is not an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
When you look at what they are introducing, and I think the sports they brought in this time around, I think surfing got in.
Rock climbing.
Golf.
Chess. Chess is next.
Golf seemingly wanted no part of it, yet still got in. Squash is such an ideal sport for the Olympics.
The Commonwealth Games, wasn't it?
They've got table tennis. Why not squash?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. I know that there were, and we were speaking to one of the organisers of the Dubai event, and there were disagreements between the head of the squash organisation and the IOC. And I think obviously that kind of politicking
definitely is
important, isn't it? And I know that all the players are on the same page with it. All the players want to see squash have that platform as an Olympic sport, and I think it would do wonders for the game. And I think it is just a matter of time, as you said. I mean, 20, what's the next? So 2020 won't be, but
2024
yes. In Paris, I think it is,
mm-hmm.
Is potentially a time for squash to be inducted into the Olympics, and fingers crossed that it happens, because mm-hmm. that could give squash the kind of impetus to grow even more.
Definitely, yeah.
Kenzie, we really appreciate your time. I know you're busy. I love the name as well, The Flying Daff. There she is on Instagram, also the website as well. Where's the name come from? Is that
so? There's a video of me that went viral. I don't know if you watched it. Did you? You did. Okay. So basically, I was playing in New York in the Grand Central Station. It's one of the biggest tournaments of the year. And I'm known for flying to the ball. If someone wants to beat me, they absolutely have to murder me to beat me. And I flew for, so I was playing number 6 in the world. And if I had won that point, I would have won the game, which would have brought us to 2 all games. And I flew 4 times in one rally.
When you say flew,
like
you,
literally,
you took off.
Like literally flew on the floor, went
okay.
back up.
All right.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So
a bit sore after that game?
I lost.
Oh.
Yeah, oh, a bit sore.
So the nickname has stuck. It's the name of the website, theflyingdaff.com. Also, of course, you can find Kenzie on Instagram and other social media platforms as well. Kenzie, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much indeed for coming on down to explain the journey thus far and, of course, the next chapter as well. And we're always here. We're always here. So feel free to pop in whenever you want to come and speak sport. We're here for you. So thank you again for explaining
everything. Thank you so much.
Thanks to Kenzie for joining us live here on the show. Coming up in just a few minutes' time, March, which sport are we turning our attention
to? We're talking about cross-country mountain biking.
Of course we are. Yeah, that's what we do here on The Grill.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.